Welcome back to How Not to Do Research with me, Zweder Breed, Juliet Verschuur, and Leo Rika. Thank you very much for tuning in again. We are going to explain to you how not to do research based on our own experiences. We are going to give you our overview of the research that we plan to do. Then we are going to explain to you how it worked out and our findings for future research. So, first of all, Leo, would you please like to share something about the methods and the plan that we initially wanted to use?
Our plan was to measure integration through a series of participant observations and semi-structured participant interviews. We outlined a series of churches and a range of African barbershops and African cosmetic stores in the city center with hopes that we could organize some interviews, get to meeting, and then start getting some answers to begin measuring integration. We also wanted to pair this with a series of quantitative methods using government census data that I believe Juliet is an expert on. Would you please enlighten us?
Yes, of course. So some of the literature that was found was very vague. So we had to take inspiration from other migration areas. For example, in The Hague, we had to take from Turkish immigration. And one of the main areas that people move to in The Hague is the Schilderswijk. And they move here because of the presence of compatriots, so people from their area of origin, but particularly family who can help them to find work and accommodation. The literature also stated that the area makes them feel safe because many of their compatriots live there and they are therefore inconspicuous. In a separate analysis of diaspora organizations in the UK, Germany, and the Netherlands concluded that the ability of the diaspora to organize collectively in the country of destination depends on characteristics such as the size of the community, the political and policy environment, and individual attributes, i.e. leadership, experience, and legal status. When we look more towards the quantitative data, according to the Migration Index, Dutch integration policies score above the average EU country and similarly to Western European countries. The Netherlands' approach to integration is classified as temporary integration, with countries like France, Italy, Germany, and the UK following the same plan. The Netherlands has more developed policies than Austria, Denmark, and Switzerland. And the key reason for African migration to the Netherlands varies greatly depending on country of origin. But key reasons include asylum seeking, family reunion, and labor mobility. When it comes to more solid numbers, out of just over 17.5 million people living in the Netherlands, 4.44 million are migrants, of which 750,000 hail from Africa, either as first or second generation. And that's according to the Dutch government's data set. For the specifics of The Hague, it was far more difficult to find solid figures because aside from main migration groups such as Surinamese, Turkish, Moroccan, and Western, everything else is classified as other non-Western, and that includes pretty much the rest of the world. So we had some difficulty with that.
I can imagine that that must have been quite difficult indeed. So, as for your literature, that does sound, in theory, it does sound quite educated and underbuilt. So thank you very much for sharing that. Now we are going to discuss the methods part of our research. Juliet, can you please share some aspects of the scouting that we did?
Yeah, so in terms of the methods that Leo mentioned earlier, we had our practical sort of application of that, or we tried. So we started off by going to one of the Ghanaian churches. But it turns out that that was only on Sundays. So the caretaker there gave us a contact, and we messaged and asked if it would be okay to join a service. We didn't have any response, and in the beginning we were thinking we could still just go, but actually afterwards, probably for the best, we decided that it probably wouldn't be appropriate to go without any prior consent. A second church that we reached out to explained that there would be too much of a privacy issue. He did agree to do an interview and talk to us initially, but we tried with the correspondence, but it fizzled out and we had to look to other things. After that, we went into sort of migrant neighborhood high streets. So for example, the cosmetic shops that we thought were a good idea and a good place to start ended up being owned by a lot of Asian people. In the second or third one, the woman asked me what Ghana was. We decided that we would have to change our scope a little bit. So that's what we ended up doing.
That is indeed very true. Then, yes, Judith, you already covered this a bit, but Leo, can you please elaborate a bit more on like the resistance that we encountered during our field work, so to say, in The Hague?
For sure, and I think resistance can be split into the two parts. We have the resistance we saw with the churches, where it's a very private space and a very personal space in a way that is not as common here in Europe. And that was something we'll get into how we did not consider that, but it makes it very difficult to, in the time constraints of a project like this, to be able to walk into a church like this and be able to get the answers we're hoping to get, especially considering it's a sensitive topic like migration, where a lot of things in the Netherlands, despite being a very integral country, there are still elements of subworlds in their own. We noticed a lot of the African community went to church and lived in a very specific part of town. And then the second aspect of resistance was what Julia just mentioned about the stores and the fact that all of these stores marketed towards African largely are not run by Africans. And our only way really that we'd be able to use them would be by, well, doing the classic standing in front of the door with our little notepads.
Yeah, accosting people.
Essentially. And already it was clear that people did not want to be accosted in their churches. And I'm sure if they're anything like me in terms of being not very social, I would not want to be accosted like that. But either way, those were the resistance that we ran into for most of our data gathering. Sader, maybe you'd like to say some things about how we adapted following that?
Yes, of course. Well, I would also like to say that I do understand the resistance. I think you explained it very clearly, and I do think that indeed, like, if I was in a situation like that, I would also be a bit hesitant, very likely, to answer research like this. So yeah, based on that resistance that we encountered, we decided that it would be a good idea to reorganize the research and maybe put a different scope on it. What we did was that we, instead of using a qualitative approach, we started using a quantitative approach. This meant that we started to create a survey with questions based on the previously assessed literature, mostly the literature that Juliet mentioned as well, in terms of where people live and what their activities are. So we divided the survey into three topics based on like personal experiences, a sense of community, so like whether or not people would attend church services or go to sports associations or just spontaneously go meet their friends in public spaces, that kind of stuff. However, then the third theme with this was the use of like their feeling of security as well as integration within their community and in The Hague. Of course, these questions seemed valid and supported by data at first, but as we all came to the conclusion as well, it did not necessarily reflect their true experiences of the people that we wanted to gather data from. As a matter of fact, we got about 15 responses at the time of recording for this survey, 14 of which were females, and one of which was only employed. The rest were all students. This can be explained through the distribution of a survey. We did try to hand the service in at local stores as well, where Africans would come, such as previously mentioned cosmetic stores or supermarkets. But most of our respondents came through the Afro Student Association at Leiden University, through which we also helped to distribute the survey. So there's definitely also quite a bias in terms of respondents related to the distribution. So that was that for the survey. In that case, can we go to the lessons that we learned? Leo, would you please elaborate on that?
Absolutely. So a lot of the lessons we learned became incredibly apparent once we received feedback from one of our co-professors, Yinka, shorthand. And there was two key things that were quite clear to us that we made a mistake in. The first is the idea of building trust. Especially considering the sensitivity of the topic for a lot of these people and within the framework of how things are these days with the current largest party in the Netherlands, it's true that we would need a lot of trust building. And that is something we are going to keep in mind, especially going forward. But it's true that like that was something that very much eluded us. And the other element is cultural differences, and especially they could be in terms of like allocation of space. So in regards to how African communities tend to see the importance of church in a way that is not mirrored in Europe, and thus anything that happens in and around church is immediately more private and more sacred than we would consider it. And that was definitely the problem we immediately ran into. Another element was once we adapted our method and data collection to have the survey, we didn't think very highly of it, but it seemed obvious to put things like sports club as a recreational activity, dance club, and all these things without necessarily having the intonation. But it's true that there is a lot of elements when you think of clubs, of prestige, of exclusion, and that's something we did not consider. But we are aware of now, and whenever we next make a survey, we'll definitely keep in mind how words can very quickly be lost in translation and experience.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. I think that's a very insightful and also critical approach to the mistakes that we made. So, looking into the future for our upcoming field work, what are some things that we have learned and that we especially take with us when applying our knowledge to the field? Juliet, would you please like to start?
Yes, so when we do go conduct our research, I think that the thing that we need to pay the most attention to is taking time to build the levels of trust and forge stronger links before we just go straight into asking people for things. I think also it would be quite important to have a local who can help to explain cultural significance of the things that we as Western observers might be unaware of, and that could significantly improve both trust and eliminate misunderstanding from, you know, just pure cultural miscommunication. The fact that we're dividing the Casamance into two parts hopefully will allow us to build relationships in the first section, and then on return we can hopefully try and build upon those to gather more meaningful data.
Thank you very much. I think those are some valid points. As for me, I really agree with you. I think that a cultural understanding is very essential to have, and I do think that having an interpreter, or at least somebody from the region who is familiar with all the customs and traditions, is essential in order to properly do research, especially in such a sensitive field in which we are going to be working. I also think that we need to be very aware of our biases, because even with academic literature, which is more often than not, even from Western authors and Western scholars, it might not necessarily reflect the situation on the ground 100%. This is also something that we need to be very aware of. Leo, do you have anything to add to that?
All I want to say is I think this project really showed us the importance of peer reviewing. And I think going forward, we're all going to have similar topics, but with vastly different themes. And that means that we have the knowledge, insight to help each other while still having the fresh set of eyes. And I guess what this project has taught all of us, and a nice little note for positivity for all the kids listening in their future research, is that, you know, data is data and research is research. When one door closes, another one opens.
That was it. Thank you very much for your contributions. And you, the listener, thank you very much for tuning in again to How Not to Do Research. We will be reporting back to you after our trip to Casamance. And we are looking forward to sharing all of your findings with us. On that note, thank you very much again for listening. And we wish you a good night.
Bye. Bye.
Be sure to like and subscribe and drop a comment down below, and do share this with your friends. Thank you very much.